it's up to you and me to shine a guiding light and lead the way. United by our cause, we have the power to pursue what we believe. We'll achieve the realization of our dreams.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of New Horizons. I'm Vaughan Bennison. Thanks once again for your company. Today we're joined by Ricky Chaplin from Blind Citizens Australia and Crystal Malcolm from Blind Citizens New South Wales. We're going to talk about the NDIS from two perspectives this week. We're going to hear from Crystal about some individual questions which seem to be coming up again and again about the NDIS. We're also going to hear from Rick, who has been involved in advocacy regarding the NDIS. How are we going?
At the moment, we're very much dealing with individual issues as they come up for people. So people that are having difficulty accessing supports for their secondary disabilities, so if you have a hearing impairment, for example, in addition to blindness or autism, for example, or people trying to get new pieces of equipment that they might need, what we're hearing is that getting the personal support through the NDIS and approved is much easier than what it is to get requests for equipment through. And so we're having to assist people to advocate and to justify why they need that equipment. The appeals process and the complaints process is being very heavily promoted. And so people are having to sort of resort to that to get what they need rather than having it approved in the first instance, which is a really laborious process and really puts the onus on the individual to prove why it is that they need what they need. I think what's happening is that there's a gap between the people who are going in and doing the plans and actually meeting people face-to-face and the people who are approving the plans who've never actually met the person in question. They're basically dealing with a heap of information on paper. They don't really have any sense of the context that a person lives in. The concept of reasonable and necessary is really acting as a gatekeeping process. And you've also got that in tandem with the fact that about 95% of people who are working in the National Disability Insurance Agency are not actually from a disability background. They don't have lived experience of disability. They come from a culture of, you know, really questioning why people need this stuff rather than going, oh, yeah, I get that. The person comes first sort of thing. So, yeah, it's a culture that really needs to change. That's going to be a long process, I think, to get that to change.
Because that's what the NDIS was supposed to be about, wasn't it, Crystal, is very much the individual.
Yeah, exactly. So the whole purpose, as I understood it, of what the NDIS was supposed to do was give the choice about what support you need and when you need it back to the person with the disability, and to look at your whole life and how having a disability impacts on your being able to do the things that you want to do. So rather than going to a service provider that would provide a certain type or number of services based on the block funding they received, the NDIS is really supposed to help you nut out what areas you need some support with and what that best support would look like. The thing that keeps coming up for people who are blind or vision impaired that I'm talking to are things like preparing for planning meetings. So a lot of the forums that have been held around the country to help people prepare for the types of questions that they'll be asked in their planning meeting haven't been geared at people who are blind or vision impaired. We've got the ongoing issue of accessing information. I've been spending a lot of time talking to people now that I've, you know, been through the process myself and also supported a few of our members and other people in New South Wales to get through the process, why they're asking the types of questions they are, you know, what that might look like for us. So, for example, up until the NDIS came into being, we received the majority of our supports for free from organisations like Vision Australia and Guide Dogs. We never had to pay for that. So there are some questions specifically in the planning meeting that are designed to help the NDIA determine whether or not you already receive funded support so that they can still be included. Well, a lot of people who are blind and vision impaired were saying no because we didn't pay for service. But what it really means is, you know, a paid service now are things like guide dogs, are things like the supports you would get from Vision Australia. So the answer really is yes. And then the follow-up question to that is, how often do you receive those supports? The fact that we don't need supports all of the time, and so they might say, well, once a month, twice a month, something like that. What they're getting at is, if you have a mobility aid like a guide dog, you use that mobility aid and you have it with you 24/7.
Is there a particular trigger point where the NDIA will say, well, you don't use that service often enough for it to feature on your radar?
Not directly, but I think it's a really tricky issue that hasn't yet been addressed, and it's one that's specific to people who are blind or vision impaired. And I think this is where the NDIA even would say that they're on a learning curve. And this is why we need to keep putting in the submissions that we have been whenever we get a chance. So, for example, we put in a submission to the Productivity Commission's inquiry into the costs of the NDIS, and we highlighted a lot of issues like that. The fact that issues are episodic, or the support needs are episodic. The fact, for example, that we don't necessarily need a specialist assessor to come in and tell us what we need if we've been blind all our lives. We pretty much have a good knowledge of that. Whereas someone who's newly diagnosed with a vision impairment would need that. So policy approaches to things like that need to be flexible. This is the kind of stuff that we need to get across to the NDIA at a systemic level. I think that's what we need to do, is forge a relationship with the NDIA so that we can not only put in submissions based on this stuff, but also speak to people directly within the agency to start to get the message across.
I'm interested in getting a better understanding of how readily these services are provided under the NDIS, because at the moment, if I want to get a guide dog, I just ring up guide dogs and say, I'm interested in getting a guide dog, can you help me? And they go, oh yeah, yeah, we can do that, and so on and so forth. What would be the process if we were under the NDIS?
As far as I understand it, it would depend on where you were at. So if you haven't got a plan yet, guide dogs will continue to provide services as they always have to people, whether they have a plan or not. But as far as getting support for a guide dog and funding for a guide dog included in your package, if you hadn't got a plan yet, you would still ring up guide dogs and say you were interested, and they would come out and do the assessment. But then you would have a supporting document of some description to take to your planning meeting that says, I'm on the waiting list waiting to be matched with a guide dog, so that then they could allocate the amount of funding necessary to pay for that dog.
But what about the situation where, for example, I've gone and got my plan and everything's organised, and I suddenly thought, hey, it might be a really good idea to have a guide dog because my sight's got worse, I think it could really help me. What can I do in that instance?
You can ask for a plan review at any time.
Yeah.
At the moment, you've got to ask for a review for each particular thing. What we're trying to get across is that you should be able to just have it like a mini review. It shouldn't be this major process. It should be that you should be able to just ring up your planner and go, oh, this has come up. Can we factor it in, rather than have this long-winded kind of process.
Rather than having to review your whole package, which is what has to happen now. The way the system's operating, which doesn't seem to be working effectively for a lot of people, but it's the fact that the time hasn't been put into the pre-planning process. So what I'm telling people now who are calling me up is to talk to all the current service providers so that they can find out exactly what that service is doing for them, and then they can work out whether or not that's meeting their needs, so that when it comes time for the local area coordinator to come and meet with you to talk about your plan, you've got supporting evidence to say why this works or why this doesn't work, so that you don't then have to go back and have a review, 6 or 8 weeks into the plan, and then wait for however long it takes for them to get around to reviewing your plan. But, you know, having said that, even when you're as prepared as you could possibly be with all of your supporting letters and assessments from occupational therapists or assistive technology reports or any of that sort of stuff, things can still happen from time to time. So it's really important to keep track of what you've told them, what you've given to them, so that if they lose it, you can say, well, here it is again, and just flick it through.
It seems to me that this process is an unusually bureaucratic process, and that the emphasis is placed here on the individual doing all of the work. Now, I'm not suggesting that the planners are sitting there doing nothing, but It's up to the individual to find the supporting evidence, and it's up to the individual to collect this evidence and have this evidence gathered together in order to support the need for the plan and what goes into the plan. That seems to me something that most of us will take for granted and most of us will do fairly readily. But what about those people who can't?
That's what we're finding, is people who don't have the supports in place already to help them negotiate the system are the ones who are having to go back and ask for reviews pretty much straight away. And this is an issue that keeps coming up at various advocacy workshops and conferences that I'm going to for people with all types of disabilities.
So, Rick, what's the NDIA doing about this?
At the moment, I think that they're only starting to acknowledge that it's a problem. Based on a conference I went to yesterday, I actually think it gets back to that cultural issue that I was talking about before. They're actually using it as a gatekeeping process to try and spend as little money as they possibly can. So when it comes to reasonable and necessary, for example, what they actually said at this conference I went to was they're actually taking that very seriously and saying, well, just because somebody else has this service or this piece of equipment, it doesn't mean to say that you should have it. So that is the bureaucratic culture of the organisation. So I guess there's two answers that we can sort of give immediately. And one is that, yes, unfortunately, at this point in time, it is up to the individual to develop those justifications. And I would never advise anyone to go into this without an advocate, no matter how skilled you are, because it's very easy to be in the middle of something and not think of everything and not realize. Whereas from an outsider's perspective, it's easier for them to kind of help you justify why it is that you need what you need, because you just live it every day. You know, it's not something you consciously think about. The other thing is that, yes, we need to, at a systemic level, point out to the NDIA just how bureaucratic this process is and that it's unacceptable. And we do that by taking every opportunity we can to put in submissions to consultations and inquiries that are continuing. It's unfortunately frustrating that we have to deal with this here and now situation, but that's what we're stuck with for the moment. But at a systemic level, we need to work to change it as well.
So what's BCA's position in this, and what's BCA planning to do in the future?
I'm hoping to, on behalf of BCA, start to forge that relationship with the National Disability Insurance Agency. We certainly have attempted to do it before. We also need to constantly point out through our submissions that it's not good enough simply to view everything through an economic lens, which is what is happening at the moment. We need to really advocate for a holistic perspective on how these supports and equipment will enable people to contribute to society. If you don't provide these supports and equipment, it's going to cost them more in the long run, because people won't be able to develop to their full potential or to contribute. We have to learn to speak their language. And one of the things that BCA will be doing is we'll be running workshops so that we can start to educate individuals about how to dialogue with the NDIA, what language to use. So I guess at an individual level, we'll be educating people about that. At a systemic level, we'll be pushing very hard to get that to change and for the agency to become more person-centric.
Ricky and Crystal, thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks, Vaughan.
Our pleasure, Vaughan.
Crystal Malcolm with Blind Citizens New South Wales and Ricky Chaplin from Blind Citizens Australia. I'm interested to hear your NDIS story. If you've got a positive NDIS story that you'd like to share, get in touch with me, or a negative one. I'm interested in hearing both sides of the discussion. new.horizons@bca.org.au is the email address, new.horizons@bca.org.au. If you'd like to get in touch with Blind Citizens Australia, then contact bca@bca.org.au or call the main office on 1-800-033-660. They'll be delighted to hear from you. I'm Vaughan Bennison. It's been a pleasure to have your company over the last 15 minutes or so. Do take care. Until next week.
We'll achieve the realization of our dreams. Of our dreams.